Hi, this is Daniel Cervantes. So this is This Week in Asia, episode 66. Today, I'm recording over in Starbucks in one of the local malls after a 4G event by YTL Communication. But we have a very, very special panel today, starting off with a guy that we have not heard for a very long time, our Mr. Producer, Mr. Mike Fung. How are you, Mike?
Hi.
Welcome back, Mike. Good. It's good to be back.
How many episodes have you been missing, anyway?
Let's see, 6 weeks. So that's like 6 episodes. Oh, no, more. It should be about 10. I think close to 10 episodes.
So, Daddy for the... I mean, what's
Four.
New? Yeah, what's new with...
Yeah, right. So the reason why I've been not been hearing my voice because I've been... I just had a new baby girl. Her name is Myra. She's 6 weeks old. So she's good. She's growing well, and I thank you guys for all the wishes that I had on Twitter.
Okay, awesome. And also down in Singapore, we have Dr. Bernard Leong.
Hi, everybody.
You are actually going to be really busy hitting your 1 million impression for Chalkboard, correct?
Yep. Another week more to go. Then we're going to have a party.
Yes, and have you decided where we're going to have the party?
I will wait till when Samuel gets back first. Then I will talk about how the party is going to be. But we'll get a good place. We'll try to get a good place for party.
Okay. Looking forward for it. Mike, you're in, right?
Well, this is the first time hearing about it. But I definitely want to be there.
Awesome. Okay. And besides our regular panel, we have our regular guest, Dr. Serkan Toto, all the way from Tokyo. Serkan, welcome back
to the
show.
Hi, Serkan.
Thank you so much.
So I heard you've been busy moving around, actually, and you recently did a post for NTT about NTT Docomo over in TechCrunch. What was it about?
Yes, actually, that was just a few minutes ago that I pushed it out. It was basically about the company's showroom in which they offer up, the most futuristic technologies that they're cooking up. And just check it out on techcrunch.com.
Is there anything new that you're working on?
Not much really. I'm planning to do an article on TechCrunch about Japan's social gaming scene at the moment, but it involves a lot of work. So I, still working on it. Mm. And because there's been a lot of movement recently, so yeah, let's see if I can push it out in the next few days.
So Serkan, I want to know, so what do you see in NTT Docomo? Any interesting new tech that they have showcased that caught your interest that may be rolled out in the next couple of months or weeks?
Well, I think it's a little bit further down the line.
Mm. Okay.
What's interesting about the company is that they have launched in Japan something called Next Generation Network (NGN), which can basically handle a lot of data, audio and video, that other networks can't handle. And they built a couple of services around that. And I highlighted four technologies that they built around that network in this posting. For example, remote video and audio collaboration and telemedicine and digital signage solutions and all that stuff. So it's pretty cool, but I think it's still a couple of years away.
So is it similar to what we've seen when NTT Docomo used to do all those videos about what the future is going to be like? Is it a new version? What are you going to see in 10 years?
I think NTT, not NTT Docomo in this case, has shown in the showroom to me is much more solid. So it's not really prototype or like super duper futuristic stuff like the videos that you mentioned, which they sometimes release. But it works already, right? And but it's not 10 years down the line. Maybe I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years maybe. And some of the stuff that they're actually showcasing has been commercialized already, meaning that you could go out and buy it.
So Docomo has always been in this space for quite a long time, and they've always been focusing on rich media. I think even before the 3G days that were out. Is this technology going to run on 3G itself? Are you going to run on the Docomo's private network? And will we ever see this in 3G in coming future?
Yeah, that's actually what I just mentioned is, with the digital signage and blah, 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 is not really mobile, but fixed line. a fixed line network.
Right.
It's like an optical fiber high performance network. But again, it was launched in 2008 by NTT in Japan only. So I think they are using Japan, their home market, as a test market. And if things go well and if they can actually turn a profit, it might be possible that they export it. But actually, at the moment, it's completely a domestic play and mostly experiment and prototype based.
Actually, Singapore is also now going to be rolling out the NGN broadband as well. So we're also going to be having that, I think, starting from next year. Already, mm-hmm. some of the areas have already upgraded to 1 gigabit access, also for video and audio. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Excellent. I mean, some of the stuff that you can do with that NGN is like really, really amazing. I mean, I was really, really impressed, and I see so many things like every day, right? And you know, yeah.
So moving on, one of the reasons why we got Serkan in is because this week is a very Japan inspired week, and moving on with the first story. Last episode, we got an interview with Mr. Craig White from MIH, who invested in companies like Tencent and a Singapore-based startup, app provider Bus City. And recently, it's announced on AsiaGen, the NoBot, a Tokyo-based tech startup, who introduced this ad optimizing SDK called AdMaker. It's just partnered up with Bus City. Bernard, as a guy who does mobile ad, what do you think about this?
Actually, it's surprising that they use a smartphone ad optimizer, because Bus City has always been focusing on WAP, or what we call feature phones. Mainly their markets has been in Indonesia, Africa, India. So I think they might be now considering looking into the smartphone market. So I think that seems to be where it's going. But let me understand, NoBot is actually an ad optimizer type of... Is it in terms of like SDK trying to optimize ads, or what does it do? Sakan, do you have any sort of thoughts on that?
Well, I checked their website because I never heard neither of the company nor of the solution itself.
Mm.
But what I've been wondering is why, you know, a Japanese company, why a Singaporean company reaches out to a Japanese company for ad optimization on smartphones, because the smartphone market here in Japan is like, it's not as big as in the US or other places, right? Because most people use feature phones, which are super advanced, which are much more advanced in some cases than the so-called smartphones. But at this point, Japan is definitely not a smartphone country. So, but I have no idea if they have like a killer solution or something. But judging from the website, it looks like a usual ad solution to me. I'm not sure.
Mm. So do you think that, I'm actually not sure about that, so that's what's why I'm actually surprised as well, because Bus City's been always doing WAP featured phones, which is more in emerging countries. So they actually, although they're based in Singapore, mm-hmm. but most mm-hmm. of the markets are overseas. In fact, they are almost second largest to InMobi in India, which has actually moved to Silicon Valley. So it's actually pretty interesting now, suddenly they are doing things on smartphones. So I suspect there's some rolling out of smartphones ads, and I think they might be moving into a smartphone ad network, given the type of competition that's heating up in the area. Yeah.
Well, the other interesting thing about Bus City is a company that has actually come a very long way. It started off with selling content in terms of doing ringtones and wallpaper for very early phones. And then they went into SMS broadcasting, and I think that is also one of their key strengths in terms of what they are doing now, instead of just servicing feature phones.
Yeah, but I mean, they've also been having Bus City developers nights every month, I think. They've been looking a lot into the ad space, but they are focusing on more trying to gather publishers. But a lot of it is trying to service emerging countries, because I think originally when they were doing in China, they were also doing something like ads, but more on website with web publishers. So now they move into the mobile. I think they pivoted about four to 5 years ago. So ever since they have been in the mobile ads space for quite some time, actually.
Moving on to the next story. But another company that is invested by MIH, Tencent, has recently just acquired Dominator ComSend, which is the main, well, essentially the biggest provider of BBS over in China. And Gang Lu had an article over in Mobinote, which you'll see millions of Chinese mobile sites is going to be powered by Tencent instead of the Discus system, which is powered by Comcent. Bernard, you added this story in, right?
Yeah.
What can you tell us about it?
I think the basic thing is that while everybody talks about Web 2.0, one of the places where most China internet users usually go to are online forums, which is a little bit Web 1.0 to some extent. And the largest online forum, which a lot of people talk about tech, entertainment, lifestyle, all the way down to, you know, even small niche interests in Comcent. In fact, Gang was, when I was in China visiting Gang at one point, he actually wanted to introduce me to meet the founder of Comcent, which is pretty interesting because they have actually have, I think their readership is, the users is actually much more than most of the social networks added up together. So I was kind of impressed by the fact that QQ actually, or Tencent, actually acquired Comcent at this point. But as in what they want to do with it, I think that is the part that we need to sort of think about. So is it just a traffic play just to increase more usership for QQ? Is it trying to enlarge the digital assets? Or what are they? Or maybe they might want to bring in something else into Comcent that may be able to proliferate maybe Qzone, social games, and...
Well, in terms of social network compared to forums, I think forums are still big over in Singapore, especially, or in Malaysia. And what are your points in that? Do you have any insights on... is this just a play in terms of just buying traffic, or they just want to eliminate competition?
I wouldn't know in terms of what their main strategy would be, but if I were to guess, looking at where they come from the beginning, where they're actually looking at using forums, which is actually a very close-based community, and you know what we're talking about, building your own tribes and own community right now, forums are still the best place to go to and to get the mindshare of these people and actually to expand the user base is kind of a good idea for what Tencent is doing. And I think Tencent has been in a buying spree of getting top line companies that actually have a lot of user base and a lot of users that will actually eventually will get these users to leverage upon each of their own technologies that they have. I think that's what Tencent would be doing rather than just increasing their user base.
Sakan, so what do you think is the overall strategy for Tencent to sort of acquire Comcent?
Well, according to Gang, who basically knows more about this stuff than me, you know, Comcent is, we can expect Comcent to get tightly integrated into Tencent's QQ platform, right? So he basically, in his posting, he lines out five possible points of how Tencent can do that. For example, a simple thing is that Tencent can use its own search service, Soso, within Discus, right? And there are a couple of more hooks that Tencent can use to get Comcent's users onto its platform, and all of which are online outlined in this article.
I guess you think it's more of a content play or rather than trying to integrate services across platforms from looking at what Gang has solved.
Looking at what Gang has posted here, it's probably both. Right. So, but what I think is interesting that nobody did that in the places like the U.S. or Japan, for example. I mean, in Japan we have Nichan, which is basically one of the biggest internet forums in the world, and basically, you know, Mixi could do the same, for example. Right. I mean, they could buy it and then they could lead traffic from one place to the other. But nobody did it, especially because there's a lot of questionable stuff on Nichan, for example. I don't know, sexual content and all that stuff. So I'm really wondering how Tencent will handle that.
I mean, that's a really funny thing about it, because in sense that forums are really popular, they are evergreen, and you can and. Laohe.net is probably one of the biggest sites in Malaysia. But yet, I mean, they could easily move into other stuff. They don't do that. And it's really hard to monitor. From experience, what I talked to the owner in Laohe, it's really hard to monetize forum, especially there's so many random content and so many things that go off. So it's a very interesting strategy that they are adopting.
Actually, I would beg to differ on that, because Hardware Zone, after being acquired by SPH, has actually made a profit by the acquirer. But the reason, because they got sort of a 2-year exclusive deal with Google AdSense before Google actually moved into Singapore. So they made back double the money that they used to acquire Hardware Zone. At that point of time, I think Singapore Press Holdings acquired Hardware Zone, which is Southeast Asia's largest online forum, worth for $7.1 million, which is undervalued. And they actually made a profit back after that. It seems that it depends on how you want to integrate the assets, because I think after SPH acquired Hardware Zone, the traffic is still increasing anyway, because most of the Southeast Asia people like to go onto online forums to exchange news and even do primitive versions of group collective buying, like, you know, before even Groupon turned up.
And I mean, if you look at the US, right, I mean, nobody wants to have anything to do with 4chan, for example, right? Mm. Even though the site has so much, a lot of traffic, I mean, the guy who's running it, I mean, he constantly complains that he can't monetize the site. Right. So if he, you know, and he doesn't get his site acquired, he can't make money out of it. So it's basically, you know, just a lot of traffic, which is hard to monetize, and also a lot of questionable traffic also on 4chan, right?
Right. So, but the key is that he can actually redirect the traffic, right? Which is what Twitter do to Google as well. I mean, Google actually acquires traffic from Twitter. That's partially how Twitter's revenue stream comes about, right?
Right, right.
So the same strategy could be actually even used even for forum traffic. I think some forums, like Delphi forums in the older days, they do that. They actually push traffic into the major sites. I guess with things like Facebook discussion groups these days, it's probably hard to do that.
Mm. Well, looking at Laoyat, right? Laoyat do make a lot of money from private advertising and to the forums, to private, to the user channels. I mean, yes, I agree that there are a lot of communities in there, but that actually makes kind of a strength for them to actually push out the different target markets that they have. And I mean, I don't know. I've spoken to some people, and it looks like Laoyat has been expanding for some time. And of course, they have not been able to do more than what they do in the forums, but looking at the brand index, looking at the way people are advertising, they're looking at Laoyat to be one of the major channels in Malaysia.
Yeah, basically, Laoyat is really strong in terms of the local users, and they recently launched a female site, which I'm trying to find. What is it? And the one of the reasons why Laoyat can survive is they are really lean. I think it's really run by 2%.
No, it's run by a few people. I've known a few of them, yes. But there are a lot of forum moderators which they have made volunteered to do that. So a lot of their forums are actually moderated by quite a few volunteers, and some of them are actually friends of mine. And but the main running of the Laoyat company is actually a handful of people. You're right. They are very, very lean.
I thought it was interesting to look at this from another perspective. In the West, most online forums are almost dying. But in the East,
or dead.
Online forums are still thriving. Mm. Yeah,
I think it's a bandwidth issue, because an accessibility and the way things, communications have so-called evolved to a certain period. Because when you build a community like a forum, that community stays very strong. I'm not sure why. I'm very sure that in the IRC channels in the West and in some underground channels, forums and IRC channels are still very, very, very active for the underground. The reason being is, you know, you're less trackable. You're easier to be anonymous in that form as well.
Yeah. So I haven't been to a real forum for a long while. It's just mostly browsing. We'll be back with Alibaba buying another US company. Some news from CorpPro, and see you in a moment's time.
Hi, I'm Joey Ito. I'm the CEO of Creative Commons and an angel investor, and living in Dubai, and I'm in Singapore, and you're listening to This Week in Asia.
Hi, welcome back to This Week in Asia. We have Dr. Sakan Toto, Mr. Mike Fung, and Dr. Bernard Leong. Well, I guess our show, we do attract a lot of doctors, but I'm just Daniel Cervantes.
And Mike
okay.
Fong.
Okay. And Mike, well, yeah. You're Mr. Mike Fong. I'm just Daniel Smith.
You forgot there's also Dr. Gang Lu as well, you know.
That's right. Gang Lu. This is like the Mike... Google of podcast, man.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. We need to get our doctorates really soon. I know a guy who sells them. So.
Yeah, I know. I'll print one for you, print one for me. That's never great.
Yeah, I'll make sure to sign it really nicely. Okay, so, well, moving back to China, Alibaba is making news again where they bought a company called Octiva. Essentially, it's a tool that you provide for power sellers to optimize their selling on sites like eBay and including Alibaba itself. What do you think about this? This is just breaking, actually. I think it was tweeted by Thomas Kempton.
Wow, that's going to be very interesting because now the question is, what's eBay going to do? Because they just bought a very important tool for them to actually do all the sort of performance buying and selling stuff.
Well, it's not a really main tool, but essentially Alibaba spend, how much is it? Well, it's actually part of their $100 million plan to boost its presence in the worldwide economy. It was not said that how much this company was bought.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a very funny thing because Alibaba has never been really strong in terms of the auction scene. And are they taking a snipe at eBay now? Or is this buying a tool that just caters to their users?
But I thought Alibaba has Taobao and a couple of other like eBay-like auction sites, right? As far as I understand that.
Yeah, as far as I know, most of their sellers actually go to the main site instead of actually going to the eBay bidding type of solution.
So what is better than to buy the one that actually powers eBay's listing and templating and all that kind of stuff and have it for your own site? I mean, now you can say that, you know, the tool that used to power eBay is now with us. And so, you know, Alibaba has always been growing in this in the e-commerce area anyway. So forward selling is pretty simple, but auctioning is probably another animal that they could not have tamed pretty well. And I guess this is one of the ways to actually corner the market. If you can't beat the competition, just buy the competition, right?
I thought this was interesting in another sense because last week our guest Craig was talking a lot that Naspers, MIH actually invests a lot in e-commerce sites. And you have Rakuten, it's been flexing its muscles in the last couple of months. You know, Groupon as well. So it seems that there's a flourish of e-commerce-like sites having activity. So I thought maybe I should get some thoughts from Serkan. What do you think about it from another perspective to why Alibaba sort of getting into the US and buy something off there? I mean, does that actually have a lot more... Is it showing that Asia is having more influence now in this whole e-commerce business?
Yeah, I wanted to say, I mean, if you said 5 years ago or 6 years ago that a Chinese company... the stock is traded in Hong Kong, but you know, it's still a very Chinese company, at least to me. Goes out and buys a California based e-commerce company, right? I mean, nobody would have believed that this is a possible scenario. You know, but now, I mean, they're going out and buying companies and have $100 million in their war chest. And as you just said, Rakuten bought one company in Europe, Price Minister of France, and another one in the U.S. for a combined $500 million U.S. dollars, right? Mm. So those people are like really, really, really aggressive. And I think it shows what I always say that in 5 to 10 years Asia will rule the web as a whole, and I think that these are the first signs of Asia taking over the scene.
Mm. So you think that there's going to be a lot more activity that moves towards collective buying, auctions? I mean, basically more trading type like platform in that case.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there's still huge opportunities in Asia's e-commerce business. And if you look at the recent months, seeing that Yahoo Japan Shopping is expanding into China, that Yahoo Japan no, I'm sorry, that Rakuten is now linking its platform with its Taiwanese platform, and a couple of other occasions like this. So there's a lot of movement in that area, and I think it's just going to continue in the next few years.
Well, like what Craig mentioned last episode, e-commerce is fundamental in terms of what MIH is looking at. Looking at most of the sites that are really making the dough, is somehow e-commerce related. It's already rumored that Groupon is making $1 million per day. So, it's rumored. The CEO just smiled and said, "Yeah, we probably maybe." But well, moving on to a story that Serkan wrote in AsiaGen about Sakai Camera. Serkan, will you want to run through this story?
Can you tell us a little bit more about Sakai Camera so that we sort of get some context across? Yeah.
Well, Sakai Camera is basically an application for smartphones, for iPhone and Android. There's also an iPad application available, which is like based on augmented reality, right? So it basically launched during TechCrunch 50 in 2008. And the idea is that you use your smartphone's camera to augment the real world, you know, by having the application overlay images over what you see on your camera, and you know, these images can be you know, small icons, they can be video images, audio images, audio files, texts, and what have you. And so the idea is that if another user goes to the spot where you left, for example, a text message or an audio file, he can basically shoot, fire up his smartphone's camera, and then access what you have written or what you have spoken at this very point through his own cell phone.
So in the case of Sakai Camera, is it like a social network where only your friends can see the content, or anyone can actually see the content at the particular location on the augmented reality surface?
That's a good question. So, after the smartphone application became available in Japan first, there was a huge complaints by the first users, because basically all of Tokyo was full of icons, right? So basically, I mean, they had a lot of users in the beginning, and they still do, and they basically covered the whole city with these icons, and so people started to complain that there's too much noise and that they are not getting good information. There are quite a few functions that help you filter out like unnecessary or trashy or whatever icons, and that basically help you. Help you to the relevant ones.
So did they have like APIs from the guys who created the apps to sort of be able to allow people to build layers, or it's still a very closed platform where they just allow people to just stick data, video and audio data into the augmented reality surface?
It used to be very closed, but in March this year, the company behind Sakai Camera, which is called Tonchiro, it's a startup based right here in Tokyo, they opened up the camera, the Sakai Camera API, and now it's possible for third parties to deliver content within the Sakai Camera platform. And what they did now is they actually just launched it a couple of weeks ago, augmented reality apps. And the first two augmented reality apps are two games. One is an action game, mm-hmm. and the other one is a role-playing game. So the idea is that you basically mix the virtual world, this game, with the real world, and that you run around and what you do in a role-playing game, right? Yeah, so you get into the role of another character, you collect points and all that stuff, but everything is based on the Sakai Camera platform.
So it'd be interesting if Sakai Camera becomes a social network, right? Because suddenly then you can actually have more meaningful information and turn it more social, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what they're trying, right? I mean, so now they launched, after the API, they launched Sakai Camera on the web, which is accessible through www.sakaicamera.com. And it allows you to access all of your icons, the so-called tags, augmented reality tags, through the web. And so you don't need to fire up your smartphone to access the information that you have there. And you can now the web solution basically combines, makes it possible that you can find your Facebook friends, your Twitter friends, your Foursquare friends, and so that you have a much, much tighter integration with those services.
So what does what Sekai means? Is
Sekai means basically world.
Oh. So it's a world camera, basically.
Yes. So it's very, very simple term, actually.
You reckon that they have a chance to go global before some US guys clone this app?
There are some augmented reality solutions out there now. But I think that Sekai camera on a worldwide level is still absolutely leading, right? I mean, their technology is much more refined. They have more stuff to offer to the users, and I think they're leading.
Actually, there's an app called Across Air that was actually on the iPhone. It actually makes use of Google Maps, Paranormal, and quite a number of new features too. I think because they have leverage on Google Maps and Paranormal, they are able to actually bring in a lot more content right now than you just the current users that's starting on Sekai maybe. But if you look at Panoramio, which is the biggest content sharing for location-based photos and stuff like that, you will see that the Across Air browser, what they call the augmented reality browser, allows you to pull in tweets, pull in Facebook, pull in Panoramio. And they even have a feature called Car Finder. Basically, you can be where you are, click on something called "This is where my car is," and basically you can just stick the iPhone and stick the camera and turn it around, and you can actually tell you where your car general direction is going to be.
Okay, so one thing I noticed in all these like augmented reality apps is the way they lay out content, because I think the trick to sort of becoming very popular is when you have an augmented reality interface that is much more user-centric, because a lot of it is they're trying to push the layer in front of you. So what happens is that if a lot of annotations is on that layer, the information get consumed.
What Across Air has done is that they have make it hierarchical. Basically, you don't like layer it on top of each other, but they have put it on top of, as in you have one picture at the bottom, the other pictures will stack on top of it. So you can actually scroll the pictures from top to bottom, and you can even scroll left to right to see what you have in there. They don't overlap.
Oh, okay. So that deals with the overlay, over like too much content is pushed
correct
into one layer, basically.
That's right. And then you have a feature to actually turn off those layers, in a sense that you don't want to see everything, you just want to see pictures, right? And then when you want to overlay something on the picture, then you say bring up the Wikipedia of the place that you're looking at, right? So I find that Across Air is one of the leading ones, as in because they have a lot and a lot of content. They bring in Google, Yelp, Kite, Bing. You can even customize your own RSS feeds onto it. You can put in Twitter, of course. YouTube, Panoramio, Foursquare, and they classify between banks, bars, cinemas, coffee, hospitals, so on and so forth. You can actually layer whatever you want, and you can customize in that sense.
So it's going to be augmented reality based, and I guess this is where things are usually going. I think it's still need a little bit of time before it's all go mainstream, right?
I think it's a little bit get used to it, you know. I mean, I like it in a sense that if I want to quickly visualize where I am, especially in a place where I am foreign to it, it actually helps a lot. But if it's a place where I'm already familiar, that might not help too much. But it actually helped me discover a lot of things. Like, you know, I wanted to take some sunset pictures and whatever not. And actually, using that Across Air browser actually helped me look at what are some places that actually look nice before I even go there. And that actually was one of the discovery things that can be done with what you call augmented reality browsers.
Just maybe one more comment from me. So basically what Michael just said, you can basically do the same in Sekai Camera too, right? I mean, if you have too many icons, too many layers, and there's a vacuum cleaner function, right? So it's a filter function, right? So you push a button, and according to your needs, you can filter out irrelevant stuff, and then you just get the information you need. For example, landmarks, right? So Sekai Camera is already integrated with some third-party applications.
Nice.
And what's also interesting to say about this is that I think that augmented reality has still one problem, and that's you have to switch on your camera, you have to have a smartphone, and the battery dies very quickly, right?
Very true.
I mean, just if you play the game that Sekai Camera just brought out, the RPG, I mean, you're done after 1 hour, right? Then your battery is dead.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really a huge problem, right? I mean, because you need to. I mean, there's first a usability problem. You have to do something first before you are able to, you know. I mean, you have to switch on the camera, then you have to wait for the server to pull the information onto your screen, and then the battery dies very, very quickly.
Mm. So if you have an iPad, then if you have an iPad and you put a camera on it, then maybe that problem might be resolved, because iPad has a stronger battery life. But yeah, and it may last longer.
Actually, I don't think so, because what I believe in terms of augmented reality is it's such an active process of actually engaging in augmented reality that it's not going to take up mainstream, because you need, like what Mike said, you need to use it when you need it, and like what Serkan said, there's so many steps to use before you can actually engage in augmented reality. So on certain scenarios it will work, but not. I do not imagine something that Sekai Camera will pick up that far off, actually. Mm.
So are they well-funded, Sekai Camera? Yes, Sekai?
Yes, so they received $4 million a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. and wow. rumor, and Japan's second biggest telecommunications company, KDDI, between 30 and 35 million subscribers in Japan, has recently invested in the company as well. And rumor has it that they are getting a new round of funding in the next few weeks.
Mm. Are they making any money at this point in time?
Yeah, so they are. What they're doing is they are selling that solution to a couple of companies that use Sekai Camera technology in the back end. For example, a shopping mall that uses. The technology to augment the reality within the vicinity of their, and of course within the shopping mall itself. So you go around, and then you don't see any other icons or the so-called Sekai Camera tags, but you see shopping mall specific tags only.
I'm being very, very curious here. Do they have any kind of location-based light features in their API or whatever? Have they done anything in the location-based space? Because they can, in principle, you can actually integrate it pretty well with Google Places, actually.
Yeah, it's a good question. So what Sekai Camera is actually working right now is that they're saying that they are trying to be the third wave of online gaming, of mobile gaming specifically. Oh. So the first wave was social gaming, mm-hmm. which is on the mobile, which is very dominating in Japan with Gree and Mobage Town.
Yeah.
The second wave, they say, after social gaming is location-based gaming, for example, with Foursquare, if you call that a game. Mm-hmm. And the third wave is solar gaming. So they are trying, and solar stands for social, location-based, and augmented reality. Oh. So they're trying to basically mix all those all these three elements together, and in order to create a new genre of games.
Ah,
interesting.
This is very interesting. Yeah. That's a very interesting vision. Yeah.
Yeah, I should play a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so well, moving on to the very last story, essentially, Michael Smitty. Smitty was recently featured on E27 because of a TV ad got a record of 7,000 users just on the TV ad. Have you guys seen the app?
I heard it's on the YouTube, so I haven't seen it yet, but it reminds me of something that was done a year ago by Foursquare, because, in fact, actually it was in February. Foursquare ran a TV ad in the US with a particular channel called Bravo, which is actually, they do a lot with coupons and affiliate sales channel. And they actually got some, and they actually managed to chalk up almost 1 million check-ins at a very, very short time. And that basically gave them sort of the tipping point. And suddenly Foursquare suddenly just went all the way sky high. I don't know whether Corporal's strategy in getting a TV is presumably the same way to try to get more users onto the Corporal platform. But I thought it was very interesting because, you know, when we were having drinks at Smitty's place, which Mike wasn't there, we talked about this TV. So now it's okay. No more disclosure. It's already disclosed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I don't know. I was just wondering the effectiveness of old media. Does it, is it easy to help us in getting more users and more whatever?
I mean, what I can share from Japan is old media. What Bernard just said, old media is actually being used by some mobile gaming services, the aforementioned Gree and Mobage Town, to attract users, right? So if you switch on Japanese TV these days, there are so many spots, professionally made shots, spots, and very, very expensive, at a very, very expensive primetime, at primetime positions on Japanese TV, on major TV stations, all the time by those two companies. And I just recently heard that that Gree has, which is one of the leading mobile gaming companies in Japan with over 20 million users, they are now the single most active buyer of TV advertising spots in the whole Japanese market. Right, so ahead of Toyota, ahead of Sony, ahead of all those big brands, it's a mobile gaming company that leads the pack, right? So so the only explanation that I have is that they looked at the numbers and that they saw, okay, this works, right? So let's just invest even more money into it.
Yeah, so can you remember the Super Bowl this year? I think Google went and bought the ad for the first time because everybody dropped out of it. Usually it's taken by Pepsi, you know, some other big conglomerate, and then for the first time everyone dropped out and Google just went in and buy an ad for the Super Bowl.
Right.
But I don't think that will actually translate to any active, more active user for Google. It's more, it's really funny to actually see that how the Gree and the Mobage Town, it's actually one of the number one advertisers in Japan. I know old media does work to a certain extent to bring awareness for new users to the solution. But I think spending so much money on it, you gotta be affiliated to the TV agency or it really works.
Well, I don't know how you look at it, but I think old media these days are also suffering from advertising, so they lower prices on the, you know, getting TV spots, because Super Bowl was undersubscribed this year, and Google just went in and said, hey, we can pay for it, you know, the kind of thing, because of financial crisis as well in the US. So I think that there may come to a time that their costs reduce, so that maybe currently with thriving internet companies, they can actually buy ads. I mean, maybe that's already what is already happening in Japan. I sort of wanted to ask another question. So I guess Corporal being a location-based service, buying TV ads, is interesting. So I also heard, I saw a tweet from you, Serkan, a couple of days ago, who retweeted Masaru Ikeda, who you recently introduced to me over email.
Right.
Mixi is going to unveil a location-based service soon, right?
Oh yeah, yes. They're planning that, right?
So are they going to do something like a Foursquare clone for Japan?
It's probably going to be a Facebook Places clone. So it's going to be heavily integrated into their existing service, and the thing is that they are not very innovative, right? So they basically wait until other companies, for example, Facebook experiment with stuff before they're doing their own things. And so the thing is that they're absolutely tight-lipped about it at the moment, but in the next, there's going to be a big big MIXI event. I think it's on September 10th, where they're going to unveil their location-based service strategy.
We should probably get you on the show if you're going for that event.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'm probably going there. Yeah.
Okay. The other thing, just one more thing before we go off to events. So maybe we actually didn't have a chance to talk about it last week about Facebook Places. I mean, so far it's only open to the US and it's only limited, but the privacy options are all on inside your Facebook account, because I actually went and disabled mine. So I probably just wanted to ask, what are the panel's thoughts on Facebook Places? Who shall start first, Mike?
So yeah. So I guess it's one of those things that you have to add on right now, that every other website, every other online service provider would have to have is a service that allows you to check in or allows you to inform your friends where exactly you are at. It's no longer just information that you're allowed to say, oh, I'm at this restaurant somewhere, but you actually can be able to click on it and it goes to a map that actually pinpoints exactly where you are. I don't have a lot of love with this kind of stuff. Even on Foursquare, it's nice to have, but I guess it does have the whole social media spin and aspect on this. I think it is pretty important for Facebook to actually to catch up with this kind of technology. In terms of a Facebook Places app, I think it's great for Facebook users, of Facebook users who have not gone out of its walls, who doesn't even know what Foursquare and all these things are. It's actually very, it's one of the best things that ever happened to them. But for other people, I mean, it's like it's another privacy issue where now, okay, not just I got people tagging me, now people can tag me and exactly a location where I am, which is gonna be kind of a scary thing to imagine.
Yeah,
but of course, yeah. I think you pointed out that you know you can turn that off in the profiles.
So have you disabled it? I immediately went and disabled it because the very thought that everyone will suddenly tag me at a particular location makes me very vulnerable.
Exactly.
I don't care. Just tag me wherever you want.
How about you, Sakai?
I'm actually a little bit with Daniel with this one. So I, you know, when they made the announcement, right? I think the only big surprise was that Foursquare and Gowalla were in the boat. I think that was the only surprising thing. Apart from that, I mean, what's so unbelievably surprising, right? I mean, you know, a lot of people have written multiple analysis and reports and whatnot on what Facebook Places is going to look like, so whatever. That's my answer.
But do you see like have you been reading reports from a couple of people saying that the Foursquare CEO Dennis Kerr has been dissing Facebook Places?
He said it's boring, right? And I think he has a point. I mean, I think Foursquare is boring too.
Well, I agree with you on that, definitely.
But you know, I mean, it's nothing special, right? I mean, at the moment, right? I don't know what their plans are for the future, and which other partners might be there and help them make it more relevant and more interesting. But at the moment, it's, you know, it's nothing special.
Yeah, I guess if you don't really care about it, I think it doesn't matter. But for those people who are really advocates of privacy, it's like this is one of the things that is a no-no to quite a number of people. But I guess, you know, yeah, I don't care about it, but I care about my privacy enough to go in and turn it off, basically.
Okay. I guess we can move to events now.
So only one note, though. Have you guys seen the Places logo?
Yes, it has a 4 on it.
It has a 4 in a square. And apparently, if you zoom in close enough, you see Gowalla peeking at the side.
You serious shit.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Well, the other thing, you see the pin. Does it remind you of a company like called Google?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. Google never really picked up its latitude stuff, you know.
No, but that is Google. That is totally Google Maps.
Yeah,
I have a T-shirt.
I think so too.
That pin. Yeah.
Well, Facebook are not creative people, so what can we do?
I mean, they are not the first to the market as usual.
But they always will tell people that they are the best. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, let's move on to events. There seems to be quite a lot of very interesting stuff. This coming weekend, it will be Barcamp in JB. For those of our friends who are living in the south tip of the peninsula of Malaysia, you can actually head over to Sunway College in JB and join us for Barcamp. There'll be a breakfast event that is going to happen on day one. And also, Geek, what is next actually? There's so many events.
Geek Camp will be next week. Geek Camp Singapore actually. That was started by a couple of people from KL. It's going to happen on 4th of September in SMU.
Is Kamal coming down?
I think so. That I heard. It's organized by all the people from Hackerspace, so it's going to be a pretty good event. I think Sao Shong's been leading the charge, Jason Ong as well from Ruby Brigade in Singapore. Yeah.
That's mostly in terms of Ray Wen and gang, right?
Yeah. They've been putting a lot of effort in trying to get all the logistics done, and I think finally we're going to have our Geek Camp, because the last Geek Camp happened a year ago for us.
Okay, so just to tell our audience, what's the difference between Geek Camp and Barcamp?
Okay, so in Geek Camp, you are not allowed to do any product management business-related talks. All you can only do is to talk about a hack. You probably want to talk about what are the 5 ways you could use Python to do some very interesting tasks. You can talk about web-driven development, web test-driven development, and different sort of like how do you develop in, say, an Android, iOS environment, etc. So it's a very, very technological talk, technical talks actually in that. So if you like to play with technology and want to see the real things people are doing with technology, Geek Camp is the place to go.
Okay, as opposed to Barcamp, which is slightly more open. Yeah. And moving on to Seed Camp actually.
Oh yeah, what's Seed Camp by the way?
Well, Seed Camp is Sukan, you're aware of Seed Camp, right?
Yeah, it's a very famous program actually.
So what do they do? Is it like funding seeding companies or what?
I think as far as I know, it originated in Europe, which is for
in
a change.
In UK, yeah. Oh, so right? In Europe, yes.
So it's basically. I think if memory serves me correctly, it describes itself as an entrepreneurial community. Or network or something like that, and so the thing is that they try to connect future developers and entrepreneurs and people like that with people in the space, right? I mean, venture capitalists, serial entrepreneurs, journalists, and all those people. And it's basically basically a mix between community and a micro seed fund. So I mean I could be totally wrong here, but I think that's what it is.
Right.
Well, actually, you got it quite correct, because essentially Seed Camp are for companies and people who are software developers who are looking for funding. So there'll be mentors, there'll be some sort of investors there, and Seed Camp Singapore essentially will happen on 5th of October. And then there is also Barcamp in Phnom Penh, which will actually happen in September 25th and 26th. What else are we missing?
We have the two big events where I'm going to meet Sakan and Gang again. That is Social Media Forum Asia and Accelerate, organized by E27, Singtel and Newton Labs.
Okay. What can we know about Social Media Forum?
So it's basically mainly for brands still using the usage of social media. They're gonna do a little bit on social networking, a little bit on microblogging, a little bit on the state of social media in Asia Pacific. I think they also be doing something on location based, which is on the second day. And Sakan, are you speaking in that event? I think so, right?
I have a speaking slot where I'll be trying to share some knowledge on how to blog on how to pitch bloggers if you're especially for Asia-based entrepreneurs.
Wow, that's probably going to be interesting. So which day is it? Is it the first day or the second day?
It's the second day.
Okay.
So it's on 22nd and 23rd of September. Then we also have Accelerate.
Yep.
Have you looked at the companies?
Nope, I haven't looked at the top 50 apps yet. Have you all guys voted for it, anyone yet?
Yes, yeah, I voted already.
Oh, that was...
I voted for Social Walk.
Uh-huh.
Both Social Walk.
Uh-huh.
And the very funny thing, there's a lot of very simple apps that are actually on there, like the SG Bus bus trip. Essentially, is someone pulling the feed from the Ministry of Transportation, the Land Transport
Authority. Yes.
Authority. Yes. Sorry, I got it wrong because there's a lot of authorities in Singapore.
Yeah, I know.
And and also stuff like Nazrul's KL Traffic from Code Android Malaysia. Essentially, is an app that pulls video feed from the local authority that monitors the traffic situations in KL.
Well, I just did a pre-event for them 2 days ago. I was actually invited to do in by Ascenders and E27 to basically talk about mobile. And I think the Jinju from Singtel actually also talked about Accelerate as a conference to basically try. They have an event where they actually match the sort of investors and also deal makers in the sense of apps trying to find, let's say, a particular vendor that they can work with. So I think during Accelerate, you'll see a lot of mix. I think it's a little bit in the spirit similar to, from the way Jinju pointed out, doing it's very similar to TechCrunch 50, but I don't know whether the implementation will look like a TechCrunch 50. So I guess I will try to sneak Sukkot out into Accelerate and take a look.
I want to make a correction. I think I will speak at Accelerate 2010 and not at the forum event.
Oh, so you mean Accelerate? Oh, Gang is speaking in social media forum because I remember that. So one of you is Accelerate. The other one is it?
Yes, I'm the Accelerate guy this time.
Cool. So we're gonna have a lot. We have parties this time.
Well, you know what we should do, Sukkan? We should get Gang to talk at Accelerate and get you to talk at the social media forum.
All right, it's fine with me. Fine with me.
Yeah. How long will you be there, Sukkan, for the Accelerate? For that period where Accelerate and social media forum happening. 22nd, 23rd September.
So I'll be in Singapore from the 19th to the 24th.
Yeah, maybe we'll slot you in for a guest appearance. Maybe this time, let's see if Smitty's place is open because you should take a look at that place. His place is great.
All right, cool. Excellent.
Actually, just let's get together and do some drinks over there.
That goes without saying, man.
Yeah,
of course.
So
make sure you don't come so late at night this time around.
Yep.
Okay, I'll try that.
Okay. There are quite a lot of interesting speakers in terms of Accelerate. We have Ben Joff again, Joey Ito, Hubert Leong, that's a familiar name, but I just can't really place it. Noah Kagan, Mike Seeger from Ogilvy Digital Innovation Lab, and...
someone from Zynga this time around. I'm trying to get the name. Is one of the business dev person, but I think we will be talking about it again.
Oh, sorry. Robert Goldberg.
Yes, Robert Goldberg. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So there seem to be a lot of events so far. If you have any events that you want to highlight, you can always email us at info@thisweekinasia.net. And also, you want to any comments that we blabber too much or you think we are good, feel free to comment in our iTunes and also drop us a comment over at thisweekinasia.net. So, Sukkan, where can we find you online?
Twitter is best. Serkan Toto in one word. That's my Twitter account.
So okay, you'll be traveling a lot coming up soon, right?
It's okay-ish. Yeah, it's okay-ish.
Okay. So you can also find Serkan's work in AsiaGen and TechCrunch and which other site?
Those are the two main sites actually.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And Mr. Mike Fung. Besides being a good dad and missing your iPad, where can we find you?
And the iPhone 4 too?
And iPhone 4. Yeah. So anywhere where you can find Mike Fong, it's 99% it'll be me. So Flickr, Facebook, Twitter, Gmail. Oops, did I give away my email address? And whatever else. Yeah, Mike Fong anywhere.
And the It Channel, Metaculous.
Yep, I run another podcast called The It Channel, and it's on metaculous.com. If you can pronounce and spell that, it'd be great.
Speaking of which, is Juicy and Delicious coming back?
It is coming back in 2 weeks' time. We start shooting in 2 weeks' time. There are a couple more shows with a couple more people coming up.
Cool.
Okay. Hey, also, by the way, I was speaking to Julia, and we are sort of planning a This Week in the Asia show in Malacca, and she was saying that she will be in Malacca somewhere in November. Are you keen for This Week in Asia, meet Juicy and Delicious with ribs courtesy of my restaurant?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think
since both shows came out from the same gathering, so it might be a good time to celebrate as well.
Yep, definitely. I think it will be quite a good experience to be in it.
Let's coordinate that, and it's going to be chaotic. And of course, Dr. Bernard Leong, as chaotic as you are, wherever you are, where can we find you?
Find me at twitter.com/bleongcw or go to my website, bernardleong.com, and 99.9999% of the time you'll find me at Chalkboard. Oh, yeah.
Well,
and the other 5% is This Week in Asia, then.
Yeah, the 0.0001 is This Week in Asia, as your entrepreneur. So that's it.
Right, now we know how important we are, but anyway.
Yes. Well, I am Daniel Cervantes. You can find me at Cervantes on Twitter, but I think I'm the only Cervantes around in the world with that spelling, CERVNTUS. Oh, no, actually, there's another dude that has the same spelling. Yeah, but he's in Italy, so if the Malaysian Cervantes is usually the correct one.
Oh, yeah, there's just one last thing.
Yeah?
Oh, there's going to be an Asia Gym meetup in Singapore.
Asia Gym meetup?
Yeah.
With who?
I think...
Who else?
Well, other than Circuit, I think Masaru Ikeda is coming as well, right?
Yes, I think Masaru is actually heading the meetup this time.
Yeah, correct. So he sent me an email and I sort of coordinated it, and Hackerspace is going to be hosting that meetup lightly. But I think we will see how things will go, and we will update you as well.
When would that be?
25th is likely to be the date, as far as I remember. But I'll check it again and report it the next time around. Yeah.
Masaru is going to be a great host. I mean, that guy, he knows everything about the Japanese web. So he's been around for 20 years. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Okay, so we should meet him and maybe grab him along too.
definitely.
All right, awesome. So with that, we can actually sign off. You can find more about This Week in Asia in www.thisweekinasia.net or go to our iTunes. Well, there's a link to iTunes. Or follow us on Twitter at This Week in Asia. Be our fan. Give us comments whatsoever. If you like our show, if you do not like our show, if you think we should be bought over by Justin Calacanis, yeah.
No, please. No.
No.
Okay. So we love your feedback. We love receiving your letters. So we'll see you guys next week. Another This Week in Asia. Bye, guys.
All right. Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.